A cold February night, UMass student Maura Murray spins her car into a snowbank. Witnesses call the police.
She was only alone from between 3 to 7 minutes.
But when authorities arrive, Maura Murray is gone.
1 minute she's here, 1 minute she's not.
What happened that February night? What sent her to New Hampshire?
She had a phone conversation with a family member, which, for whatever reason, was very upsetting.
Was she abducted from the scene of the accident?
I'm thinking somebody probably offered her some help.
Or did she run away to start over?
I think Moore realized she had an opportunity to escape all the troubles in her life.
My daughter's missing. I don't know what happened to her.
Welcome back to True Crime Brewery. Today we're talking about the Maura Murray case. Maura Murray went missing from Route 112 in Haverhill, New Hampshire, 12 years ago. In 2004, Maura was 21 years old, a nursing student at UMass Amherst, popular with a steady boyfriend and two part-time jobs. Her disappearance has been the focus of TV shows, podcasts, and blogs. We at True Crime Brewery chose this case because it is fascinating, unsolved, and it took place in our part of the country, New England. But before we get started, let's hear about what we're drinking today.
Today we're drinking Sam Adams Nitro Coffee Stout. Now, Boston Beer Company, the people who do Sam Adams beers, is one of the early craft beer people in New England. We all owe a lot to Jim Koch, who's the owner of Boston Beer Company. So about a year or so ago, they came out with some nitro beers. What they do is put some kind of widget or gizmo in the can that produces a very thick, creamy head. The coffee stout is one. There's a nitro IPA and a nitro white ale. I've not tried either of those. I'm doing the nitro stout today. So the beer is a really dark brown color, almost black. Nice thick tan head that lingered forever. The aroma and taste was all coffee and roasted malt. A nice, smooth, creamy beer. Probably a good one to try if you're so inclined for nitro beers.
All right. Can we open that up and share it?
Sure can.
Oh, you brought two cans, though.
I did.
All right.
One for each.
All right, let's open one and get it poured, and then we'll get started on this case. I'm excited.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Thanks, Dick. So 12 years have gone by since Maura Murray vanished, and what happened to her remains a mystery. Let's go over what we do know. Now, in November 2003, 3 months before her disappearance, Maura was arrested for using a stolen credit card number and buying less than $250 of takeout, delivered pizza, subs, and salads. Now, this charge that she was in trouble for was continued until December, and it would be dismissed if she had 3 months of good behavior.
So whose credit card did she take?
It was a roommate, someone in her dorm.
Okay.
Now, she initially said that she just found a receipt in the trash and used that. But as we all know, receipts don't have the full credit card number.
No, they don't.
So that's not true. And it's, you know, it's not a huge lie, but it's a red flag.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's stealing from a roommate or a dormmate.
Yeah. And for food, and some of the hubbub about this has been that she had bulimia. She's a very fit girl, but she liked to eat. And bulimia was something that I've heard mentioned by friends. That could have been something, it was well known that she did have that.
So I'm not exactly sure what the bulimia has to do with the theft of the credit card number.
Well, I think with bulimia, you might order 3 or 4 pizzas and then vomit them.
So still not sure what that has to do with anything else.
Well, I think just because you're bulimic doesn't mean that you would steal, but
right.
It might be why it was food. why she was getting takeout food.
Okay.
So anyway,
that's kind of thin, but go with that.
Okay. And it might not even be relevant, but that's what she did. She got takeout, delivered food, subs and salads with her roommate's charge number. And I would think a smart girl like her knew that she would have been caught. So it was continued, and if she had been on good behavior for 3 months, it would be dropped. Then we get to Thursday, February 5th, which is right before the weekend that she disappeared. And around 1:30 a.m., Maura was working at the check-in desk of a dorm when she broke down crying. Now, when her supervisor asked what was wrong, all that Maura would say was, "My sister." And she gestured at her phone, giving Karen, the supervisor, the impression that she had gotten a call or made a call that had upset her. So Karen, her supervisor, decided that it wasn't really a good idea for Maura to be working. She seemed kind of spaced out and not paying attention to who was coming in. She was supposed to check IDs on people who weren't residents. So her supervisor, Karen, said that she would take over.
So she was, the supervisor was worried that the whatever news she had about her sister was causing her to not focus?
Yes.
Was she worried about drugs or anything at that time?
She didn't specify that. She only said that Maura was kind of staring into space and not responsive to her questions.
Okay. So I suppose the bad news about the sister could do that.
Although we have no bad news about the sister that would account for this. We don't even know if it was the sister.
Uh-huh.
We just know that she said, "My sister."
Okay.
So Karen, her supervisor, started packing up her books because Maura was just kind of sitting there staring into space and ended up escorting Maura back to her dorm room. Now, this Karen was very concerned for Maura, but Maura, when they got back to the dorm, Maura said, "I'll be fine. My roommate will be here." But Maura didn't have a roommate, so that was a little white lie as well. So we've got two little white lies at this point, which puts up some red flags.
Most definitely. So we don't know that there was any contact with the sister.
Well, I think that she had made a call to her sister around 10 p.m., but this was about 1 in the morning when she had the meltdown and went back to her dorm.
Okay.
So.
And there's definitely no roommate.
Definitely no roommate. And of note is that on Thursday evening, there was a hit and run in the UMass area. A boy was left, Petit Vasse, about a mile from her work, and he was in critical condition. I only say that because Maura does have some automobile problems as we go through this case.
Okay. Maybe we'll find out. I'm just not sure what that has to do with anything else. Was she aware of the hit-and-run accident at the time when her supervisor found her acting funny?
Well, we don't know. Did she have something to do with it? And maybe that was what upset her. That's what I'm getting at here.
Well, okay. That's kind of a stretch, too.
Well, it's just an idea. That's all. I'm throwing it out there as an idea.
Okay.
So on Saturday, February 7th, 2 days later, Maura's father, Fred Murray, picked her up at college, and he took her out shopping for a car, he said. Now, Maura did have a car at school. I think it was a 96 Saturn, but Maura and her father said that it was run down and she needed a new car.
So he's there to help her pick out a car.
That's what he said.
Okay. Now, and just the father? Where's the mother?
They are divorced, and the mother has a broken ankle, so she's kind of disabled at this point and not able to come out there.
Okay, but the dad is wanting to help his daughter.
Yes. So Fred took Maura and a friend of hers to the Amherst Brew Pub for dinner Saturday evening, and he then took Maura and her friend to a liquor store to buy liquor for a party they were going to attend on campus.
What a nice dad.
Here's the thing. Maura dropped Fred off at his hotel room where he was staying, and she drove his car back to the campus. Now, I have a question here.
And that is?
Why? She had a car there. She was going back to campus, which was walking distance, by the way, or he could have dropped her there. Why did she drop him off and take his car, unless he was under the influence?
That's possible, or maybe he figured that her car was in such disrepair that he didn't want her driving that car, and he said, "Why don't you take my car?"
But he knew she was going to a drinking party, so you think he wouldn't want her to drive at all.
Probably not.
So Maura dropped Fred off at his hotel room, and she did drive back to the campus with her friend. And they did go to the Saturday night party. Now, Sunday morning at about 3:30 a.m., Maura had crashed her father's car against some guardrails.
Was there drinking involved?
Well, police arrived, but she was not charged and a sobriety test wasn't done. She was driven to her father's hotel. So she may have slept on the sofa, according to some accounts, in the hotel lobby, or she might have gone right to her father's room. We're really not sure. But Fred said he didn't know about it until he woke up in the morning. And she told her father early that morning about the accident.
Dad, I'm sorry I wrecked your car.
Yeah. I don't know why he would buy her liquor and give her his car.
No, I mean, that's just kind of weird stuff.
It's not very smart.
Yeah. You know, they don't go together.
Right. And
particularly if she's going to a party on campus.
She doesn't need a car.
She doesn't need a car. So why'd he do that?
Well, that's what we're not sure of, and that's why I was speculating maybe he was drunk. They did go to a brewery for dinner.
Right.
But the strange thing is at 4:49 a.m. Sunday morning, Maura is very distraught about this accident, and she calls her boyfriend, Billy Roosh. And she met him at West Point, and he's stationed in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. So it's a long-distance relationship at this point. But Billy did talk to her and calmed her down a little, and he promised he would call her back later in the day.
So how'd she meet this guy at West Point?
Well, they'd been dating about 3 years. They had met while both were attending West Point.
I thought she was a student at UMass.
Yes, she started out as a student at West Point, and then she'd gotten into some trouble. From most accounts, she had stole a little makeup from the store there, which is kind of a call for help, I would think. It certainly wasn't something she needed to do.
I think the service academies have a very strict honor code.
Yes.
So that would probably get her in trouble.
So she was discharged for poor conduct or shown the door, and maybe they allowed her to withdraw on her own.
Yeah.
But either way, she had to leave West Point.
Still, I mean, to get into West Point, that's a pretty big deal.
It's very impressive. It's not easy.
No.
According to her father, she was a straight-A student from first grade until senior year. She was in the top five of her class in high school. So she was an extraordinary student, a great athlete, and kind of an overachiever for most of her life.
And off she goes to West Point.
Yes.
And then in a year or two is asked to leave or voluntarily leaves because of this incident.
Yes.
Huh. That's something.
I know. Another thing about that was that that's where she met Billy, and Billy was actually involved in the program that they had for violations of conduct, and he was one of the officers, and that's how she met him when she got into trouble there. So he had helped her with her case and things like that.
All right. He must not have helped her enough because she still got kicked out.
She still got kicked out. Or maybe it isn't on her record that she got kicked out. Maybe it's on her record that she left, which would be a lot better for her.
Right.
Yeah.
But the end result is she left, but she continued to have a relationship with this guy.
Yep. They had a long-distance relationship where she spent holidays and summers with his family. So that was, I would think, would be good for her.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
So according to Billy's mother, Sharon, there was talk of the two getting married, and she loved Maura like a daughter.
Okay.
Now, if you've seen the 2020 episode, which was actually, it was split between two missing women. It was Maura Murray and Brittany, I'm going to say Whitfall, but I'm not sure if that's the right last name. But this was a 2020 episode where about half of it was spent on Maura's case. And in that episode, they really made Maura look like the all-American perfect daughter.
They weren't implying that there was a connection between these two disappearing women cases. These are just two cases that they brought up.
Yes. The okay. other one was in Oregon.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll ignore that one.
Yes. But in this episode, it was interesting that Fred Murray had talked about his daughter as if she was perfect. He said, "I can't really talk about my daughter without sounding as if I'm bragging. Because she was a straight-A student, she was in the top five of her high school class, She got into West Point, which is really hard. And then he also said that she left West Point because it wasn't really her thing and went into the nursing program at UMass.
Yeah, so I mean, if he's such a proud father, it must have been a disappointment to him that she left West Point. And even if she was doing what she wanted to do at UMass, it seems to me he'd probably be a little disappointed in how things came out.
I think so. I think it was a bit of a letdown. What they said on the 2020 episode, to make it sound good, I think, was that her passion was to be a nurse. But when she was at West Point, she was majoring in biochemistry. So she was a smart girl to whom maybe getting into a nursing program wasn't such a big deal.
Right. It sounds like she had higher aspirations than being a nurse.
Yes.
Not to run down the nursing profession.
No, I mean, it's a competitive profession and a competitive program, for sure. But West Point biochemistry, to me, is a different level than UMass nursing.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah.
So the last time that Fred Murray saw Maura was Sunday, February 8th. He said he took her to her dorm, and she was still visibly upset, but Fred told her that his insurance was going to pay for the car repairs, and everything would be okay. So he was trying to calm her down and just let her know that they would work it out.
And did they have a new car for her, or they had just been looking? They hadn't found one yet.
They hadn't purchased one. He said that they found one that they were going to purchase the following week, but the odd thing is that when he came up, he stopped at 8 different ATMs, to get $4,000, you know, because there's a limit at each ATM of $400 or $500. When he's coming up to see her, he stops at ATMs on the way to get a total of $4,000 to buy her a car.
So that's to buy the car.
But that's very strange. Why wouldn't you get the $4,000 from your bank the day before or write a check to the car place? They didn't even buy a car. So it's something that people really wonder about. Why did he need the $4,000, and he's never explained where that $4,000 went.
It's disappeared?
Yes. Well, nobody knows where it went.
Well, what does that mean?
I guess that's the definition of disappeared.
It went missing, or did he keep it? I mean, if he didn't buy a car, what did he do with the $4,000?
He never said, as far as I know. We never found out.
Well, I'd sure like to know. I mean, I can see where you're withdrawing the money because you're going to purchase a car. Although, like you said, why not write a check or something at the time you purchase it? But he's got $4,000 cash money that's gone or unexplained.
Yes.
So that's something interesting.
Yes, I think a lot of people whose theory is that he helped Maura to get away and start a new life think that he gave the money to Maura.
Well, I don't want to tip any hands here, but As you'll see, I'm going to lean on the side of Maura intentionally disappearing. So that would be something that would be useful to her, to have $4,000.
Well, yes, she, let's go through it and then we'll talk about that. So Sunday night, Maura had looked online, they found out from her computer later on, for directions from Amherst to Burlington, Vermont. She also looked up various places to stay in the New Hampshire White Mountains in Burlington, Vermont. These searches took place up until after 4 a.m. Monday morning. Now, according to phone records, at 12:55 p.m. Monday, Laura called the owner of a Bartlett, New Hampshire condo rental, and Fred recognized this town because he said this is a place that he and the family had visited throughout Maura's childhood, a big hiking area, and Maura was an avid hiker. So around 1:30 p.m. that day, Maura sent her boyfriend Billy an email saying she's sorry she hasn't answered his calls, but she hasn't felt like speaking to anyone.
Yeah, so what you have is that there's no indication that she's planning on leaving outwardly.
She hasn't told anyone that. No.
Right, but she's looking at things online that might indicate that she's planning something.
Yes.
And she's not communicating with her boyfriend.
Yeah, I guess he had called her back because, remember, she called him very early in the morning to tell him about her accident.
Right, when the accident occurred.
Yes. So about a half hour later at 2:05 p.m., she called 1-800-GO-STOW, and that's a reservation line for rentals in the Stowe, Vermont area. The line wasn't working that day, so she couldn't have made reservations, but she could have listened to some information about finding a place to rent there.
And Stowe is not too far from Burlington.
No. And she's been up there hiking before, I believe.
Okay.
Now at 2:15, she does call Billy and leave a voicemail. And then she sends an email to her professor saying that she needs to be away for a week due to a death in the family. Now, this is really weird because that was not true. There was, according to all of her family and friends, there was no death in the family.
Well, that goes back to the disturbing news from her sister when she was on dorm reception duty.
Yeah.
That didn't occur. So something's up.
Well, and some people wonder the death in the family. Was that a hint that she was suicidal? That could be. It's a possibility.
Sure. But it could also be that she's using that as an excuse to disappear.
But if you wanted to disappear permanently, why would you even bother? Just to keep them at bay for a week before the search starts?
Well, sure. Why not? I mean, if you have a plausible excuse, I'm attending to a death in the family, that would be better than just disappearing and people are going to be noticing pretty quickly. Whereas Maura, she's not here. So it gives her, if she is planning on disappearing, it gives her a week or so lead time.
Okay. But only with her professor. She didn't say this to her friends or family. Well, obviously not to her family. They would know there was no death.
Right.
But she didn't say this to her friends. So it was only buying her time with the school, which makes me think she thought that she might come back to school.
Well, but why make up the story about a death in the family? You just tell the school you are taking some time off for a week or whatever.
Well, classes had just restarted, and that probably wasn't an easy thing to do. You can't just say, I'm leaving for a week without a good reason.
Okay.
And then something I found out just recently was she had packed up many of her things. She'd removed artwork from the walls. Now, if you're going to pack up most of your things and remove things from the walls, that makes you think it might have been a permanent move.
Right.
But something we're not sure of is maybe those things were still boxed up from winter break, from her Christmas break. She might just have never unpacked from
there. So they might not have been unpacked? Yeah,
right.
I guess if the second term, second semester was just starting and she had stuff. Although, why pack it up over winter break?
Well, that's true.
She's returning to school.
Yeah.
Why doesn't everything just stay where it is?
Especially things that she put up on the wall. That is strange.
She wasn't planning on moving to a different dorm or anything.
No, good point. I hadn't thought of that.
So, but anyway, they got packed up.
Yep, so around 3:30 p.m., it's thought that Maura got into her car and left the UMass Amherst campus. Now, her first noted stop was at an ATM where she withdrew $280, and that was pretty much emptying her account, just leaving the base amount you can to keep your account open. And next, she stops at a liquor store where she purchases, now there's some debate about this, but from most sources I've heard, she got a bottle of Kahlua, a bottle of vodka, a bottle of Bailey's Irish Cream, and a box of red wine.
So she's going to have white Russians and wine.
Mm-hmm. But no milk, maybe black Russians.
Well, with the Bailey's Cream, maybe that's kind of a white Russian.
Oh, I thought with Bailey's, I thought you had to have milk to make it a white Russian.
Well, you traditionally do.
Because that sounds really strong.
But milk has to be refrigerated, so
maybe
she was going to cheat a little bit and have a fake white Russian.
Well,
or
maybe
just a plain old black Russian and drink the Bailey's and wine.
Well, it was noted that when she went with her dad to the Amherst Brew Pub, she had a black Russian, which was just Kahlua and vodka.
That's
right. Sounds really harsh. A strong drink for a young lady.
Yeah, but they're quite good.
Yeah.
So, but that, to me, that's interesting. I mean, if you're looking at the theory that she's arranging her disappearance, I can see emptying her bank account. But then why stop and pick up a bunch of booze? What's
that for?
If you're
going by yourself, wouldn't you just want a bottle or two? Why would you need all that?
Right. You don't need all that.
Even if she had an alcohol problem, that seems excessive.
Exactly.
Now, there are some sources that said that she bought wine coolers, but even then, that was a lot of liquor. She spent about $40, we know that, at the liquor store.
And that's, so $280 is what she withdrew, $40 of it.
Went to liquor.
That's a substantial amount. Again, if you're going to disappear, don't buy the booze.
Well, and if you want to get a place to stay up in a resort or the White Mountains, she didn't really have money for that.
No.
No.
Not the 280.
Well, or, she was down or to now 240. We're down to
240.
Yeah.
But maybe she had the $4,000 from her father.
Maybe. That's a possibility. Now, surveillance cameras at the ATM did show that it was Maura making the $280 withdrawal. No one was seen near her in that footage.
Okay.
And then on Monday at 4:37 p.m., she checked her dorm voicemail, which was a call-in service where you'd call a number, find out if anyone left voicemail to you. So it wasn't on a cell phone. It was at a voicemail held by the school.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last known phone call that Maura makes before she disappears.
So did she leave a message?
No, she was just checking to see if she had any.
Okay.
She wasn't leaving
anything. So she wasn't leaving anything?
No, she was just checking her voicemail.
Were there messages for her?
Well, we don't know because we can't ask her.
Right.
Right. I don't think that's known. Because I think if you called in and listened to them, they'd be gone if you deleted them.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure. I haven't heard anyone speak on that.
So, okay. So, yes, I guess you could listen to the messages and delete them.
Yes.
And then there's no record.
Right. So it was a little after 7, sometime after 7 p.m., that Maura's car veered off the road, Route 112 in New Hampshire, and into a snowbank. So it's about 30 degrees out, it's pitch black, and she's stranded on the road. Now at 7:27-ish, a bus driver stops to help her, and he sees that she's shaken up, but there's no blood on her, and he tells her that he's going to call the police and get her help. But according to him, Maura asked, possibly pleaded with him not to call the police, and told him she'd called AAA service. But again, she's out there in the boonies, and they discover there's no cell service there, which of course the bus driver knew that there was no cell service. So he knew that she was lying about the AAA call, which could have been innocent. Maybe she was afraid of a man alone in a bus. I guess he had taken people up to a skiing resort, and he was alone in the bus heading back to his house, which he said was nearby. So if she didn't want to go near him, she might have said, I called AAA, just leave me alone. But we know that she couldn't have called AAA because there was no cell service, and there's no record of a call to AAA also.
So she's had the accident. A good Samaritan comes by, says, let me help. She says, nope, I'm all set.
Right. She does.
Okay.
So he goes home, and knowing that there's no cell service, and out of concern, I would imagine, he calls the police.
Okay. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. And so it's at 7:46 that the police arrive. What's that, like 19 minutes later, the police arrive.
So from the time of the accident until the arrival of the police is less than 20 minutes.
Well, from the arrival of the bus driver to the police is less than 20 minutes. Arrival from the crash, which is sometime after 7, to the police arriving at 7:45, so it's less than 45 minutes.
Okay.
So the police arrive at 7:45, 46, and the windshield's broken on the driver's side. Both airbags of the front seat have gone off.
So what did she hit?
She ran into a snowbank, I believe, although I've heard that she ran into a tree also, so I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that a snowbank would break the windshield and deploy the airbags.
Well, I think the windshield, they were thinking her head hit the windshield, so maybe she wasn't buckled up.
Yeah, but the bus driver said no blood on her.
True.
So I'm thinking if she struck the windshield with any force that would cause it to break, that she'd probably have some head trauma and have some bleeding.
That's a good point. Although she could have just had internal trauma, I imagine.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe she could have internal trauma too, but I think she'd have to have some bleeding from her forehead or her head.
Okay. And it's possible we just didn't see that. Pitch blackout.
Yeah. But if both airbags had deployed, she wouldn't have hit her head on the windshield.
Well, that's a good point. But I think the airbag came from the steering wheel. I don't know.
It does. But that's exactly what they're for, to prevent you from going through the windshield and stuff. So
that's interesting.
If the airbag's deployed, I don't see how they can say, oh, she hit her head on the windshield.
Huh. Well, anyway, when the police do arrive, Maura's not there, and the car's locked, but there's an open box of wine found in the rear seat, and there are some splashes of wine on the ceiling and within the car. On the outside of the car in the snow, they find a Diet Coke bottle that smells of alcohol or red wine, and there's a pink color liquid poured into the snow, which gives us the impression that she was drinking some of that red wine from a Diet Coke bottle, I would guess.
That's what it sounds like.
But you know what's not in the car is the Kahlua bottle. That's gone.
What about the vodka?
No one mentioned that.
Okay.
Okay.
And the Bailey's cream?
No one's mentioned where that was. All I've heard is that the wine bottle was back there.
So the wine...
And the Kahlua was missing.
The open wine carton or whatever.
Yeah.
Was there.
Right.
And the Kahlua is missing, and presumably the vodka and Bailey's are not around either.
Yes. Around the car, there's no signs of a struggle. And with the alcohol in the car, the initial investigation, the police think, well, someone was in an accident and didn't want to contact with the police. They were probably under the influence.
Because they were drinking.
Yes.
Sure.
So it's not really looked upon as a as something bad had happened to her at that point.
Yeah, except she's not there.
Right.
So when did they figure that out, that the person who was driving the car is nowhere to be found?
Well, they notify Maura's parents Tuesday and say that the car has been abandoned on Route 112 in New Hampshire. And at that point, I believe that Fred Murray had said he was concerned that she may have been depressed or suicidal because of the car accident and possibly her credit card problem. So she had this probation for the credit card fraud, and then she had the accident Saturday night, which she wasn't, it wasn't a DUI because they didn't do a sobriety test. But then she has this accident. So he did express that concern, although afterwards, he stopped thinking that it was suicide, and that's not his theory at this point. But Tuesday evening, there was a voicemail left on the cell of Billy Roosh, her boyfriend, and he didn't get it until Wednesday morning because he was on a plane. And it was made with a prepaid calling card, which I guess is something Maura had used in the past before she had a cell phone in order to call him. And Billy says he heard some breathing and then a small whimper or sigh, and he and his mother believed that it was Maura calling him Tuesday.
But she, whoever the caller was, didn't identify herself as Maura.
No, no.
He's just doing this by intuition that it sounds like Maura.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, just thinking.
And no words were spoken, just the breathing and the sighing?
Yes. So it's Wednesday the 11th when Fred Murray drives from Bridgeport, Connecticut to Haverhill, New Hampshire, to join the search for Maura. Now, family members, Billy and Billy's parents come to help, but Maura's mom isn't able to come because of a fractured ankle. So in Haverhill, the family stays in a local place making calls and making flyers. The state police does a helicopter search, and they also have a search dog. So the full search has started by Wednesday, at least.
Okay.
And so at this point, what would the theories be on where she had gone?
Well, so she's on this road on some rural route.
Yes.
In New Hampshire, and she's disappeared.
Yes.
And the bus driver who she spoke with doesn't have any idea where she went to. As far as he knows, she was still standing by her car.
Yes, and I don't know when, but he was given a polygraph. He failed the first one, but they said that that was because of some medication he was on, and the second one he did pass. He was only with her for about 10 minutes before he called the police, if that, maybe 5 minutes.
So the bus driver's in the clear.
They really don't think he could have done anything. He lived with his mother and his wife nearby. He really didn't have time or the place to do anything to her. No history of criminal activity with him.
Okay. Any other cars besides the bus driver? We don't know that.
Well, we don't know. I think there was talk of another car, but I haven't really heard much about that. There was a woman in a house nearby who said she heard the crash, like a thunk into a tree. And she actually said that she thought she saw a man in the car smoking. So that didn't really flush out afterwards. And they thought maybe she saw the red light from Maura's phone trying to call AAA. Because the phone that Maura had back then was a Samsung that did have a flashing red light on it.
Yeah, and she as far as we know, she left UMass alone.
As far as we know, there's no one else involved.
And the bus driver didn't see anybody other than Maura.
No.
So I would discount any witness that says she saw someone else in the car.
Yes, I think so, because it was from a distance.
Yeah.
And at night, from a distance, you really don't know exactly what you're seeing. And I think she changed her testimony after a while, saying she wasn't sure. But it was just a little specific when she said it at the time that there was a man in the passenger seat smoking a cigarette. But even if you're in an accident with Maura, are you going to take the time to sit and have a cigarette after you crash into a tree?
Probably not.
I don't think so either. Now, police question Maura's boyfriend, Billy. They question his parents. And then Maura is considered missing and endangered. She's also considered possibly suicidal, although at this point I believe her family and her friends deny that she would have been suicidal. The search dog at the scene abruptly loses Maura's scent in the middle of the road about 100 yards of where she had the accident.
So what's that mean, that she got into a car or something?
If they lose the scent in the middle of the street, maybe that means she jumped into a car.
Yeah, I mean, the dog had tracked her from the site of the accident.
Yes.
Down the road.
With the scent of a glove, yeah.
Okay. So all of a sudden the scent ends. And yeah, I think it was probably that she got into someone's car.
But now whose car did she get into? There have been some people that think maybe she was following another car and heading up with someone else, although we have no evidence of that. She could have hitchhiked. There could have been another car that came by. But from what I hear of this road, there aren't a lot of cars coming by.
No, I mean, what you're telling me is that this is a road out in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Kind of, yeah.
So there's not a lot of traffic on the road.
Not a lot, especially in the middle of the night.
Well, it's not the middle. 7:30 in the night.
That's true.
So it wasn't 2 in the morning.
No, it wasn't.
I guess there could be some traffic.
But we know winter's in New England. It gets dark by 4, and we're all tucked in by 8 in our little town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And?
Well, I'm just saying that there aren't a lot of people out in rural New England at 8 o'clock at night,
usually. Not at 8 o'clock at night.
On a weeknight.
That's true.
That's my take on it. So it was probably fairly deserted. Although a car did come by, the bus came by within 10 minutes of the crash, about, we think. So maybe there was a car every 10 minutes or so, average.
Yeah.
So there's a possibility that she was picked up by a stranger. If she had tried to escape and run off down the street, which she was an excellent runner, she could have done that, even drunk. I bet she could have run pretty well.
Well, we don't know that she was drunk.
No, we have a feeling that she may have been drinking.
We just know that she was likely to have been drinking.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And maybe that contributed to the crash. So if someone was trying to abduct her, she could run or try to run.
Now, that theory means that there would be a random person driving by, but there's also the possibility she had stopped for gas earlier that day. Not long before then, I'm not sure of the time, but she'd stopped for gas at a gas station, and perhaps someone at the gas station saw this young girl and decided to follow her.
I guess that's a possibility.
Well, it certainly can happen. Things like that do happen.
Yeah, but I mean, how long are you going to follow her before you see an opportunity to do something? That's just kind of wistful thinking, that you're going to be able to abduct somebody because the possibility exists that they have to stop for some whatever reason. Because he's not going to run the car off the road or anything. He's just tailing her.
Okay, well, let me throw another wrench into your logic.
Okay.
There was a rag in the tailpipe of Maura's car. What if a man at the gas station saw a vulnerable, attractive young woman and put a rag in her tailpipe and followed her, waiting for the car to stall?
I could see that, except it didn't stall. It ran into a snowbank.
Yes, but maybe it would have stalled if it hadn't run into the snowbank beforehand. Maybe it was just two crazy things, two coincidences happening.
Okay. I guess you could look at it that way.
Well, it's just one theory. I'm not looking at it that way, but I'm saying that could have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if there was something stuffed into the tailpipe, reminds me of Beverly Hills Cop, where Eddie Murphy sticks a banana in the guy's tailpipe.
And what happens?
Well, the car stalls.
Okay.
And Eddie gets to go do investigating on his own. So I don't know if a rag will do the same thing, but probably. I mean, it's blocking the flow of exhaust.
Yes.
So that's something to think about.
So that's a possibility. Now, Maura's family and loved ones are interviewed by the media. Maura's father and boyfriend make pleas on TV for Maura to return home or contact them. Maura's belongings were released to Billy. And Billy's mother, Shannon, who was interviewed, said that there were running clothes, there were books for school, as well as a syllabus, which Billy's mother thought that was a sign that she planned on doing schoolwork that weekend. Now, another strange thing noted to be in her car was a book titled Not Without Peril. And that book is about hikers who go up to the mountains, and many of them never return. They freeze to death, something bad happens. But according to Fred Murray, I haven't read the book, but according to Fred Murray, it's mostly an inspirational book about hiking. So okay. That's in her car.
So what else was left in her car besides those things? Did she no money was recovered in the car? She took all her money with her?
Money, credit cards, license, that was not there.
Okay.
And the Kahlua bottle.
Right. What was there?
What was there was the wine. What else? Well, the clothes and things that were released to Billy were in the car. The okay. clothes and the books, her nursing books. Oh, and that reminds me, before she left school, she had borrowed a lab coat from one of the other students, and she returned that to her before she left school.
So the implication is that she's not planning on coming back.
Yeah, she's kind of getting things all settled.
Okay. And I guess I can see if you're in an accident and you're starting to walk, you would take your pertinent information, so your license and money and stuff. You don't want to leave that in the car.
Yes. So if you're walking off, are you doing it to avoid the police? Are you doing it? It isn't the safe thing to do at this point.
No, it isn't. I mean, particularly if the bus driver's there and maybe he doesn't say to her, I'm going to call the police, but it would seem to me that's the thing to do. I'm going to notify the police. I know you said you called AAA, but there's no cell reception here. So I'm going to call for you when I get home. Why wouldn't you wait by the car?
Well, if she was drunk, she really is not in a position to have a DUI. That would not be good. She's on probation.
Yeah. Was she drunk? Well, how much of the wine was gone?
Well, some of it was spilled, so I don't really know.
Yeah, so that's a tough call.
Yes. But maybe she drank the whole bottle of Kahlua and threw the empty bottle out a few miles back. We don't know.
Well, yeah, then she'd be drunk.
Then she'd be very drunk. And, you know, there is an idea that she did have an alcohol problem. She was a drinker. There are many rumors and even some confirmed sightings that she went to a lot of parties and had a lot to drink. She could drink.
Okay.
Okay.
So it comes back to, oh, yeah, she didn't want to hang around the car, but I don't know. You have to, you're going to get found sometime anyway.
You would think.
And maybe you've not been drinking, or by that time the alcohol's worn off, but you get found.
Well, even if you were drinking and you wanted to avoid the police, it seems like the thing you would do is find a place and call a relative or a friend to come get a ride.
Absolutely.
You're not going to walk to Canada.
No, if that's where she was escaping to.
So I think even if her plan was to escape her problems, this accident wasn't part of the plan. I don't think so.
No, probably not. No. But so, what if there was an accomplice?
That's a thought that has been brought up, that she might have had friends or maybe her father, who had the mysterious $4,000, had helped her. But I don't see why it would benefit her to leave. Even if she was in trouble, and had a DUI, what life could she have elsewhere that would be better? And she is in college, smart girl. If she disappears and tries to live on the down low, she's not going to be able to accomplish the things she wanted to accomplish. And she was an overachiever, a smart girl, regardless of her personality, whether she was a sociopath, whether she was a liar, whether she had bad relationships with her father or her boyfriend. The life that she would alternatively have does not seem like a life to escape to. And does she really need to escape? Her boyfriend's in Oklahoma. She's away from her father at school. What does she need to escape?
We're into motives now.
Well, motives, if she wanted to leave, if it was a purposeful leaving, if she disappeared because she wanted to, why would she do that?
Well, she's a kid, so they don't think clearly anyway.
I would agree. She could have been very emotional and not thinking clearly.
And
yes.
What does she need to do? I think she arranged this, and her father helped her. That's why he was withdrawing the money. Having said that, $4,000 isn't going to get you that far. It'll help you start things.
But was the trouble she was in enough to start your life over? She hadn't been caught with a DUI. It was just an accident, and the insurance was going to pay. So I don't think that would have even been held against her.
Yeah, here she is being kicked out, or at least just withdrawing from West Point. And she's gotten into trouble at UMass for credit card fraud.
Okay.
And things are closing in on her. She's crashed her father's car.
Yes. So I can see she'd avoid the police to not get a DUI. But why disappear for 12 years?
Well, how else is she going to disappear? Do you think somebody abducted her?
That's my thought. I think that it was probably someone who had abducted her, either someone from the gas station or a random person driving by. Or if she was going to escape and her father was helping her to disappear, I think then she must have had something to do with the hit and run, because that would be reason enough to leave.
That sure would.
So if she had been responsible for the hit and run plus the two accidents... Well, actually, the second accident, she'd already would have decided to leave before the second accident.
Right.
So if she had the West Point problem, she had the credit card fraud, she had the accident with her father, but then I think the hit and run would have been the major thing.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, so and the hit and run occurred before the accident in her father's car.
The hit and run occurred on the Thursday that she had her breakdown late that night.
Yeah.
So there's some gossip or consideration given to the point that maybe she broke down because she'd done the hit and run. She called her boyfriend right around the time of the hit and run. Maybe he told her, well, just get out of there. The kid was unconscious.
I like that.
So if that was the case, I could see people helping her to disappear. But if she hadn't been responsible for that, I think it would be a major overreaction.
Well, again, you get back to the age and maturity level of the child or the adult.
Yeah.
I guess she's an adult.
Right.
And maybe she figured the only way I'm going to get out of this is to disappear. But, yeah, if you add in, I like that theory. Let's say she's booted out of West Point and she's in a second level college that she doesn't want to necessarily be at, but she's there. So
okay.
She's not happy with that. And she's involved in a hit and run.
And maybe she was drinking.
And
when
maybe
that
she
happened.
Was drinking.
She seems to have an alcohol problem.
And calls her dad and says, you got to help me. He's withdrawing the money. Mm-hmm. They go through this charade of looking at cars, but they don't purchase one.
Correct.
And then she disappears.
Right.
And yeah, maybe the accident on the way to disappearance was just an accident. because, as I said, it was a hairpin curve. It's late at night. Well, not late at night, but dark enough.
Yeah.
And it's winter in New England, so there's snow.
Yeah, there'd just been a big snowstorm that Friday that school was canceled for.
Yeah, so I'm still thinking that she arranged a disappearance.
But I think even if the disappearance was arranged, that maybe the accident wasn't, and maybe she was still abducted instead of being able to disappear.
Sure, she could have. The only thing that would give me reason to reflect that was the rag in the tailpipe.
Okay. Because
I guess she didn't do it.
Well, there were some ideas I heard on, I think it was on a podcast, that her father had told her to put a rag because there were holes in the tailpipe and to stick a rag in the holes, and maybe she had done it. They did say the rag may have come from her emergency kit in her car. So that's a possibility, too.
But they can't tell how long the rag has been there.
No.
Or anything. But yeah, I guess if you have an old rusty muffler and the car has fallen apart, maybe the rag. I don't know.
The car's 8 years old. That's not horribly old for a car.
No, it isn't.
No. For a college kid, I don't think an 8-year-old car is really that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't see, timing-wise, somebody, I mean, looking at this as a crime of opportunity, that here's this young kid, adult.
Yes.
Sorry.
Young woman.
Walking on the road out in the middle of nowhere, and somebody comes along and just decides to abduct her. I guess maybe if someone saw her at the gas station and somehow stuck a rag in her tailpipe, wouldn't she notice that? I mean, you stop at a gas station to pump gas. Most of the time you pay at the pump.
Well, I don't know if she had credit cards. She probably had to go in and pay cash for gas.
Yeah, okay, so maybe somebody, but that still is a tough stretch for me to say that somebody who happened to be at the gas station saw her and said, oh, this is someone I want to abduct, and put the rag in the gas, in the tailpipe, and followed her and hoping that she'd stall out and he could abduct her. To me, that's as tough as thinking that somebody just randomly stopped and grabbed her at the side of the road.
Well, what are the odds that she would be out there and randomly picked up by a murderer?
Pretty small.
It's rhetorical, yes. But then we could compare that to the odds of a 21-year-old managing to stay disappeared for 12 years without being found out. That seems like pretty tough thing to do as well, maybe tougher.
Well, that's true. So I think if you're going to do that, you need some help.
Right.
That gets me back to the father.
Okay.
Who took the $4,000 out to help his daughter escape, and he's still in contact with her and helping her stay hidden.
What if the father took the $4,000 to an attorney? And if he told the attorney about the hit and run, the attorney wouldn't be able to tell anyone, right?
Yeah, but what's that got to do? I mean, she hasn't been charged with anything.
No, but if they thought she was going to be charged with the hit and run, because they were talking about how her car was junky and trying to get rid of that car, it seemed like.
Yeah, but you don't pay money out front in case that you're going to get charged. You pay the money once you've been charged.
Well, maybe.
No maybe.
Well, the thing is that
if she hasn't been charged, she'd just leave it alone.
Every single possibility with this case seems far-fetched. But something had to happen, right? Nothing expected happened here. Something strange happened, obviously.
She arranged her own disappearance. I think that's the most likely thing.
Or she had an accident, she was drunk, and some psycho picked her up, and she's buried somewhere up in the North Country.
Well, then you'd never find her. But
right, that would explain it.
That's more far-fetched than arranging your own disappearance.
I don't think so. I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
Okay, you can disagree with me.
So let's just go back a little bit to some of this information I got. Sharon, Billy's mother, called a Linda Salamone in Bartlett, New Hampshire. It was the fall of 2004, and Sharon and Fred decided to look over Maura's phone records and investigate Maura's phone calls themselves. So they called this Linda Salamone, and Linda and her husband own a condo in Bartlett, New Hampshire. And Maura, Fred, and Billy had rented the condo back in the summer of 2003. Linda didn't rent a condo to Maura the weekend she disappeared, however.
Yeah, but she had rented to her, well, to her father in the past.
In the past, in
2003. And Maura and her boyfriend were there.
But Maura called her before she disappeared, but did not rent a condo from her.
You know what we do? We need a map.
Yes.
To find out where all these things are.
That's right. So a reporter, Meredith Conway, spoke to a witness who said she saw Maura in a Cumberland Farms store nearby with about a 60-year-old guy with her arms crossed, and she mouthed, "Help me," to her over the counter.
Well, you know how I feel about eyewitnesses to these things.
Yes, I don't think they give a lot of credit to that one. And there have been multiple sightings since her disappearance.
Where have they seen her? All over the place?
Yeah, Canada, things like that. Towards the end of 2004, a man allegedly gave Maura's father a rusty stained knife that belonged to his brother. And he said his brother had a criminal past and lived less than a mile from where Maura's car was discovered. So his brother and the brother's girlfriend, this man said, were acting very strangely the day after Maura's disappearance.
So I guess that's something to investigate, but they didn't come up with a body or anything.
No. Also in October 2006, volunteers led a two-day search within a few miles of where Maura's vehicle was found. And in the closet of an A-frame house, cadaver dogs allegedly went bonkers, identifying the possible presence of human remains there. A sample of the carpet was sent to the New Hampshire State Police.
Nothing came out of that.
Not that we know of. I think the police has information they're not sharing because it's technically still an open case.
Well, but they haven't arrested anybody.
No.
So that, to me, that means nothing happened.
Right. In July of 2008, volunteers led another two-day search through the wooded areas in Haverhill, New Hampshire. The group consisted of dog teams, licensed PIs, Senior Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Sedstrin, and in February 2009, the investigation was still active. And he had said, "We don't know if Maura is a victim, but the state is treating it as a potential homicide. It may be a missing persons case, but it's being handled still as a criminal investigation." So that was back in 2006, 2008. And then, like I said, the 2020 episode compared Maura's case to that of Brooke Wilberger, and I think I said her name incorrectly earlier, but who went missing in Oregon a few months after.
Like three or four different pronunciations of that name.
Wilberger.
Wilberger.
That's what I'm going to stick with.
Okay, let's do that.
So this is a young woman who was 19 and went missing in Oregon a few months after Maura's disappearance, but she was later found murdered.
I mean, other than the fact that it was on the same segment of 2020, they are unrelated.
Yeah, they were kind of making a show out of the two, but I don't think they were actually connected in any significant way.
How about if, because you said she was looking at Vermont places, Stowe and Burlington. Burlington's not far from the Canadian border.
Yeah, how far is that from the Canadian border?
From Burlington? About 70, 80 miles. I mean, it's not far.
Okay.
And if you're in Canada, you're good.
Now, but back in 2004, we'd been through the 9/11 in 2001, so you needed a passport to get into Canada in 2004. Do we know if Maura had a passport?
Well, not that we've said. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I don't think she could have got into Canada without a passport at that time.
No, I think you would have needed a passport.
Okay.
It used to be all you needed was a driver's license, but I think after 9/11 that it was passports. Maybe not. I have to look that up. But you could disappear easily in Canada.
Yes.
Or someplace other than the United States.
Right, but again, I think, what life would be waiting for her there? Wouldn't it be better to deal with the life she had here, unless she had so many personal things we don't know about?
She might have thought that whatever was going on in the United States would be better off being somewhere else.
But even if you thought that in 2004, by the time we got to 2016, wouldn't it have occurred to you to go back? Statute of limitations must be up on any kind of DUI in 2004.
Not necessarily. I mean, if she's established a life wherever she is and things are going well for her, why would you come back?
Well, I guess so. I just think she probably isn't alive anymore.
That's a good possibility.
Yes.
But I think it's an equal, at least, possibility that she's enjoying life somewhere else.
I'd like to think she is. I don't wish harm on anyone, but I think that it's more likely that something bad happened to her. Being a young woman, walking in the dark, under the influence of alcohol, I just think she probably was taken by someone with bad intentions, with someone bad, a bad guy.
I would think that more likely if she was in an area where there was more traffic, because otherwise it's just a random thing. Somebody who's got ill intent is driving along and finds a perfect victim on some rural unlit road in New Hampshire? Don't think so.
I think so. I think it happens.
We'll agree to disagree.
Okay. Now, obviously, there's a lot of speculation on this case, as we found out doing our research this week. There is a podcast that is just every episode is about Maura Murray. It's called Missing Maura Murray, and you can listen to that and find out lots more details on this case. Also, there's a book coming out May 25th if you're really into this case. It's called True Crime Addict, My Search for Maura Murray, and that's by James Renner, who's a journalist, and he also has a blog about Maura Murray that you could look at that he's kept, I believe, for years. It has lots of speculation and facts about the Maura Murray case. Now, if you think you have any pertinent information on her disappearance, you can email Fred Murray at admin@mauramurraymissing.com, or you can call the FBI, and that number is 202-324-3000. You could also contact the New Hampshire State Police with information. That number is 603-233-3860. You could also visit mauramurraymissing.com. If you'd like to find out more about True Crime Brewery, you can visit us at www.tiegrabber.com. We're also on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter at tiegrabberpods. We're also on Patreon if you're feeling really generous and you want to join our TCB team. Another way to help us continue to produce our podcast without ads is to subscribe for $1 a month at tiegrabber.com/truecrimebrewery. You can also view us on iTunes, and 5-star reviews will be read on a future show. So that's it for today. I'm Jill.
I'm Dick.
See you later.
Next time.